Let us talk to Megan Barth of ReaganBabe.com, ReaganBabe.com. Check her stuff out there. Greetings, Megan. I imagine you've heard about the Supreme Court rejecting the Pennsylvania election cases and might have some thoughts on the matter. I would love for you to share them with us.
Well, I share the dissent that Clarence Thomas had published, that because the Supreme Court did not get involved initially in reviewing all of the evidence that many prosecutors or lawyers, rather, had presented, does not make voter fraud go away. It actually, by denying these cases, not looking at the evidence, putting these cases aside, will only further the organizational crime, which is voter fraud. You know, voter fraud is much larger than one voter, one ballot, one organization. I have always approached voter fraud as organized crime. When we have a newly elected senator, is he Warnock or a representative out of Georgia, under quote-unquote FBI investigation for voter registration fraud, as he was CEO of one of Stacey Abrams' New Georgia Project 501c3, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? When he was listed as CEO at the New Georgia Project for all of his years that he was there, that reference to him being CEO was scrubbed from their website, and they said, oh, we made a mistake. He wasn't CEO. How do you make a mistake of publishing your CEO on the website? So I've always approached through my investigations and my research and my work as voter fraud as organized crime, because it's multifaceted, it's multi-organizational, and there are many people with extraordinary amount of power that is complicit. So because we aren't getting to the bottom of all of the evidence, for example, out of Georgia, out of Michigan, out of Pennsylvania, out of Nevada, et cetera, this only gives these organizations license to continue committing fraud.
Sure. Nothing happened to us last time. Why don't we just do it again? No reason
sure.
not to.
And that's been going on for years. Absolutely. You know, it's interesting when Democrats kept referring to voter fraud as a myth. I remember I had interviewed on a radio program out of here out of Las Vegas. At the time, he was the current chair of the DNC, Michael Blake, I believe his name was. And I had asked him about voter fraud very specifically. This was back in 2017, and he told me at that time it was a myth. Well, then that whole narrative changed, if you recall, just in this last election, where they say, well, there might be some voter fraud, but it wasn't enough to change the election. Mm-hmm. Well, how do we know that? How do we know that? Because just because we found some voter fraud doesn't mean we found all the voter fraud.
Well, there was a time when they just refused to even look at all, and they're still doing that, really. And they it's a myth because we've never seen any evidence of it. Well, you're not looking. That's part of the problem.
You can't find evidence if you don't look for it.
Exactly. Well, you know, here's the thing. If your guy wins, you don't care whether or not there's voter fraud. We're watching now something unfold that I think is remarkable, and it's probably nothing I've ever seen in my lifetime or you've ever seen in your lifetime. Supposedly, the most popular president ever in the history of the United States, 80 million votes for this guy, 80 million votes. He can't draw a crowd. He put his President's Day speech, his message to people up on YouTube. It got something like not quite 50,000 views. And you look at, Donald Trump had a rally of some kind, a virtual rally. Over a million people tuned into this thing. And we're supposed to believe that Mr. 50,000 views somehow got 80 million votes. You know, we're seeing firsthand how Joe Biden is anything but popular. And he still is unable to put together two or three sentences in a row without fumbling and bumbling his way through them. I can't help. I feel like, Megan, if I don't laugh, I cry, you know?
Right. And I would just like to put out a offer to perhaps your listeners that happen to be people of color. If they don't know how to use the Internet because they're black or brown or whatever, like Joe Biden claimed, I would be more than happy to help them.
At what point, Do these people actually begin getting insulted by these statements? Because that is, that's a pretty big,
well, you know, a lot of these black and brown people can't, they don't know how to work the internet.
Really? That's your claim, that they're too stupid to know how to go get a COVID vaccine. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. The soft bigotry of low expectations is a political coin term that always comes to mind when Joe Biden opens his mouth, when any Democrat, quite frankly, opens their mouth. Supposedly, these black and brown people are too stupid to get an ID as well, because they claim that having an ID disenfranchises the black and brown community when it comes to voting. Well, that's interesting. I need an ID everywhere I go. And now we're mandated to get a real ID. I don't know if you know about the real ID, but we were supposed to have that implemented years ago, and it was actually part of the Department of Homeland Security making sure that if we fly or where we go, we have all the papers necessary encapsulated on this little card electronically. We all have to have the real ID, but what's interesting about the real ID is that Democrats and, of course, Republicans that bended to their will, it's exempt from voting. You don't need the real ID. You need the real ID everywhere else, to drive, to take a plane, to cash a check, to open a bank account, to get a library card, et cetera. But you don't need that real ID to vote. This should tell us everything that we know, that whatever type of safety mechanisms that we put into place within the voting system, the Democrats vote down or scream racism, as they do every single time anything's mentioned. If you disagree with a Democrat, all of a sudden you're a racist. This is their default argument. They have no argument against voter ID. But fortunately for you guys in Alabama, I understand that you do have voter ID, and you were just voted, I think, or you were just, I think, chosen as one of the safest states to vote in the nation. Georgia just followed up with a voter ID law when it comes to absentee voting. Well, if you need an ID to absentee vote, you should need an ID to vote in person.
One would think. And yeah, I think the world of John Merrill, our Secretary of State, a guy who's probably going to be running for Dick Shelby's Senate seat going forward, and we'll see where that goes. But, you know, he implemented a plan here that is unbelievably tight. I go to vote, and I can't help but look at it and think, you know, I have a history. I mean, I'm not the squeaky clean person that I play on the radio. I've been down a few roads in the past. I can't for the life of me figure out how anyone would game this system. I mean, I just can't. I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, they have sealed this thing up so tight, there's no way around it. And I think it's brilliant, and I think it should be the model by which every other state has to follow, because it's that good. But what the hell do I know?
Well, no, but it all comes down to these federalist policies that states are enacting in order to protect their states from federal government overreach. We're seeing this in Alabama, and absolutely that law, that statute, what have you, could be easily plagiarized, if you will, and used in other states in order to ensure election integrity. I think we're going to start seeing this play out prior to the next election. But we also have North Dakota. I don't know if you realize, but they just passed a law that basically banned mandatory mask wearing. And as one rep from North Dakota said, it's diabolical silliness, which it is. We also have not only North Dakota, but another state, it was either Alabama, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that passed a law, or at least went through the chambers, the House, basically protecting women's sports. Since Joe Biden decided to eliminate sports within his first days of office through executive orders. And executive orders, I have to remind your audience, are not laws.
No. That is one piece of legislation that we're looking at. Yes, we're still in session, only on seventh day of our session here. But, yeah, that is one thing we're looking at. I would add to your list the county in Missouri that is making it illegal to for federal agents to come in and try to enforce laws that would be contra to the Second Amendment. And they actually passed that as a law in that county. And I thought, well, now that's fascinating. We're going to have battles between county government and federal government. Get the popcorn.
Well, get the popcorn. And this is also a very stark reminder that actually the sheriff of that respective county has more power than any federal agent or governor. The sheriff is the constitutional steward, first and foremost. And if he believes that an executive order or a mandate or a law is unconstitutional, he simply does not have to enforce it.
It is incumbent upon him to not enforce it. In fact, hold on if you would, please, Megan. We got to take a quick break. We'll hurry back. I want to talk to you about some of the other legislation that's being kicked around and $1.9 trillion stimulus plan, et cetera, et cetera. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Megan Barth is with us from ReaganBabe.com. And this $1.9 trillion stimulus package looks like it is going to make it through the House this week. Obviously, there'll be a bit more of a battle in the Senate. This thing is just pork-tastic, isn't it? It's loaded down with a bunch of stuff that doesn't have anything to do with COVID, doesn't have anything to do with stimulating the economy. It's like every elected official's pet project has found its way in there. And we're talking about essentially going $2 trillion into debt over this, you know, increasing our deficit this year by an exponential amount, when there are a lot of economic experts out there who are saying, guys, the economy's coming back just fine. We don't need anything like this. Well, here's what we need to do. Open everything up and let's get back to work. What do you make of it?
Well, I have to laugh at the Biden voters that are discouraged that they haven't gotten their promised $2,000 stimulus checks yet. It was reduced, I think, to like $1,200 or $1,400, and then the administration says, oh, it's the same thing. Well, no, actually, $1,400 is not the same as $2,000. But $1,400 is actually going to illegal aliens in this bill. Illegal aliens are going to get stimulus checks. So if you're still waiting around for your stimulus check, you're going to wait a long time, because the illegal aliens that, according to Merrick Garland, really aren't illegal. Yeah, they're going to get theirs first. The Democrats have always prioritized non-citizens over American citizens. The Democrats are simply bailing out their buddies in Democrat states that have shut down their states indefinitely, just destroying small businesses. That's what this is. It isn't a stimulus for the American economy. It's a bailout for Democrats.
Not a surprise. They want to bail out those cities that have been poorly run for all these years, and now they're using this as an excuse. We'll never let a good crisis go to waste. At the same time, we have this testimony on Capitol Hill as an investigation is being done into the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol building. You were the first person I heard say this thing started well before the event was actually done. I mean, they were trying to break into the Capitol before Donald Trump even started speaking, much less finished speaking. And that's largely the testimony that we're getting right now from ex-Capitol police and security officers saying, look, these guys showed up with the stuff necessary to engage in a riot. They had helmets. They had brickbats. They had, in some cases, ladders. You know, they showed up prepared to scale walls and try to get in. Obviously, the people who were trying to impeach President Trump weren't interested in getting these facts, obviously.
No, absolutely not. They had to make sure they contacted the media to get the narrative out in order to label us all domestic terrorists, not just the ones that were at the Capitol, but just Trump supporters in general. And that's what's coming down the pike. My friend Michael J. Waller, who runs, I believe, the National Security Policy Institute, and I might get those words a little bit wrong, but I think it's the Security Policy Institute. He gave firsthand eyewitness testimony and reported and was published in The Federalist, which Ron Johnson read at the hearing the other day. Mike Waller has been trained in insurgency and counterinsurgency operations since the 1970s. Because he got there early and his job historically has been to track insurgency operations, he said that, yes, the men in black helmets and backwards MAGA hats arrived very early. He saw four different types of groups that had assembled. He said these people were very different than the Trump supporters he saw that were marching from the speech that Trump gave. Most of the Trump supporters, as we all know and as we've witnessed over years, are very friendly. They talk to cops. They thank the cops. They have smiles on their faces. They're waving American flags. He said these gentlemen were much different than your average Trump supporter. You know, visually, and characteristically. Also, on top of that, we can't forget the name John Earl Sullivan. John Earl Sullivan was there filming at the Capitol. I'm assuming he might have had press credentials. Obviously, he wasn't very vetted by Capitol Police or whoever was responsible for the lack of security at the Capitol that I witnessed, because he founded Insurgency USA. He is a Black Lives Matter activist and a self-proclaimed insurgent. He was there filming and was just kicking it around with CNN as he was touring the Capitol, and he's the one that filmed Ashley Babbitt getting murdered by an unknown Capitol police officer. We still don't know his name. She was the unarmed veteran that was crawling through the window, which a member of presumably Antifa had smashed. Now, another little point of and tidbit of information that came out of that hearing specifically from the Capitol Police Chief was, yes, they had intel that Antifa was planning an organized attack that day and was going to infiltrate the march. And that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what I witnessed when I was there. And what the very first thing I said when I walked up to the Capitol and around to the, I believe it was south or north side of the Capitol, was the lack of security. There wasn't. We have over 2,000 Capitol police officers at any given time. And literally, I saw maybe, oh, I don't know, a dozen standing on the back steps of the Capitol. So with all of this information that the Capitol Police had, all of the intel, the FBI didn't even share their intel with the Capitol Police. You have to wonder why. It's no wonder that Antifa and those that had infiltrated what was supposed to be a peaceful protest were able to do so. And I witnessed Capitol Police officers literally opening the gates and the doors to for people to walk in. And these people had helmets and these people had backpacks and these people had flagpoles. I used to call on the Capitol. I used to get wanded, x-rayed, patted down, etc., before I even set foot in the Capitol. And God knows I couldn't take in a flagpole or a helmet or a backpack.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered here. I don't think we're going to get those answers because it doesn't fit the narrative that the media and the left is trying to sell. They're going to bury all of this information quickly because they're invested in the, well, it was Trump supporters. He whipped them into a frenzy, along with Mo Brooks. And that's the whole reason why this took place. Nothing, of course, could be further from the truth. But, hey, up is down, you know, left is right, black is white, unless, you know,
and
Coca-Cola.
And which
You got to be less white. You got to be less white if you work at Coca-Cola.
Well,
apparently,
right.
I don't
yeah.
know. Got to leave it there, Megan. A pleasure, as always. We'll do it again next Wednesday if you're of a mind to. In the meantime, have a fantastic week.
You too, Richard. Thank you.
There's Megan Barth, ReaganBabe.com, ReaganBabe.com. Read her stuff there.